Hello, everybody. Good morning, and welcome to Meditation for Evolutionaries. I'm Craig Hamilton. I'll be your host here today. For those of you joining us for the first time, a special welcome. This is an event we offer one Sunday every month. The focus really is to share this practice of direct awakening that I teach with anybody who wants to come and have an experience of it. It's open. And the way the event typically works is that I give a talk at the beginning, then I guide us in a meditation practice for 40 or 45 minutes, and then I take questions for about half an hour. But because this is our final event of the year, I have a little different structure in mind today. I want to do something special. And what I'm going to do with our session today is make it a bit more of a meditation workshop, is kind of the term I've settled on for what I'm trying to do, which is I'm going to share with you experientially some of the approaches, practices, and insights that we've been engaging in my latest evolutionary laboratory experiment. And to explain what I mean by evolutionary laboratory, I think as a number of you know, those of you who've been following me know that over the past several decades, I've guided and facilitated a number of these evolutionary laboratories. And what I mean by that is I don't mean that we wear lab coats and attach electrodes to our head, although people are doing that with meditation these days. But what I mean is that places for dedicated experimentation with spiritual practices, with an intention to continue to refine spiritual practice and the awakening process. Kind of, it arises out of the belief that yes, the timeless wisdom of the traditions is incredibly valuable. It's a treasure trove of wisdom that we can draw from, but we can also keep innovating and evolving the way we do practice. Human beings are different today than we used to be. Human life is a lot different than it used to be. So what are the kinds of practices that work for us, contemporary spiritual practitioners? And you've noticed the title of the event here is Meditation for Evolutionaries. So that brings in another big word. What's an evolutionary? Well, that's just a broad term that is being used by a number of people these days. And what I mean by it is an evolutionary is somebody who is doing their spiritual practice not just so they can feel better and have more inner peace, but because they recognize that the human race needs to wake up, the human race needs to evolve, and one way of doing our part to help that is to do spiritual practice. So we see our own evolution, our own awakening as a contribution to the awakening and evolution of consciousness, life, culture itself. So that's really the framework around what I mean by an evolutionary laboratory. And really it was through the many thousands of hours of meditation that we did in a lot of the laboratories that I've been involved in that the unexpected insight that's really become the foundation of the way I teach meditation came into existence. And I'll speak a little bit more about that. Because really the core insight behind this work is that it's possible to practice awakening directly. So what do I mean practice awakening directly? Well, if you think about the way we generally think about practices, and spiritual practices included, they're usually something we do now to prepare to do something else later, to get better at something so that we can perform at a higher level in the future. And spiritual practice, of course, is I'm doing meditation so someday I will discover enlightenment or spiritual liberation or freedom or my true nature. And what this practice is really about is how can we practice being awake right now? And essentially over a long period of time, we looked at how awakened consciousness manifests. What is it like to be an awakened human being? You know, people having experiences of awakening, we realize it's one thing. It is a universal human experience, even if it's a rare one. But awakened consciousness has traits, it has qualities, it has attributes. There are natural ways that anybody who is having an experience of awakened consciousness shows up and relates to life. And so what we've done is develop a system of practices that is based on the actual natural dispositions of awakening, and that is involves stepping directly into the natural orientations, qualities, dimensions of our own true nature or our own awakened consciousness. And over the years, I've been fine-tuning that work, mostly in somewhat smaller groups, but this last fall, I started my largest collective awakening experiment with the launch of a new online course called The Practice of Direct Awakening that started a couple months ago. And I really wanted to see if I could teach this and replicate the results of that I had been having in smaller groups with a much larger group of people. And we now have a group of about 1,800 people going through this program right now from about 65 countries. And we're on week 10 of a 12-week journey, and it's been utterly awe-inspiring what's been happening for people, and really wildly exceeded my own expectations, which were already pretty high at the beginning. So essentially, with the year coming to an end and with that program coming to an end, I wanted to use this opportunity to share some of what we've been learning and some of the core principles and practices that have been kind of we've been working with in this program. And I thought, rather than just telling you all about it, the most powerful thing I could do would be to give you a mini workshop in the practice, share some of the practices we've been doing, and also talk about the context for those practices and how they work and the insights behind them, so that you can get a very tangible experience of this without having to take my 12-week course, but obviously lets you know what that's like if you are interested in that. So the way this is going to go today is that I will, when I say workshop, what I mean is that I'll give brief, you know, sort of a series of brief talks that will lead into brief practice experiments. So I'm going to give you several different, guide you through several different meditation sessions, and I like to use the word experiment because it gets us in a, see, and you hear me using laboratory experiments. Let me give you a little bit of the frame about what I mean by that. So part of what having an experimental orientation to spiritual practice does is it gets us out of thinking we know where we're going and that we know how to get there. Because by its nature, spiritual awakening is something that really our minds can never know how to do. And even meditation is something your mind really can't fully know how to do. You can certainly learn a technique and remember the steps you're supposed to take through doing the technique, but the what we're awakening to and what it really means to meditate is something that is beyond the mind. It's about learning how to access a dimension of our being that is beyond the mind by its nature. It's beyond the mind and ego. And so when we say, I'm sitting down to meditate, and we think, okay, and I'm going to do these steps, and I'm going to get to this peaceful state of consciousness where I'm content and I have an expansive awareness and we have a picture in our minds, we've already totally sabotaged the potential of our meditation, because meditation's always a journey into the unknown. So I'm using the term experiment. I invite you to see your meditations always as an experiment, because that way you're sitting down saying, well, I'm going to apply a set of practices and principles and I'm going to see what happens. That's what a good experimenter does. We, of course, know in the world there are many researchers who sit down with an agenda to prove something and aren't that open-minded and aren't just interested in what they're going to discover, but we're being good inner scientists in this way of approaching it and bringing that kind of openness and innocence to it. So that's where we're going today. So, cool. And then I will spend the last half hour taking your questions about the different practices that we've done here and what I shared about them. So we've got from now till the top of the hour, so that's about 50 minutes for the workshop, for the, you know, practices and talks, and then we'll have half an hour for questions. And I may extend that if there are a lot of questions. We'll see. So, to begin, I just want to take a moment to clarify what I mean by spiritual awakening or awakened consciousness, because this is something that people mean many different things by. It's the terms are bandied about. We all have different ideas. So when I talk about awakened consciousness, I'm talking about consciousness that knows its true nature, consciousness that has been liberated from what's traditionally been called ignorance or unconsciousness or delusion or illusion, and that has come to know who and what it is and who and what, which also means who and what we really are. So consciousness that's awake to its true nature means you are awake to your true nature. Means you are awake to who and what you are beyond the mind, beyond the ego. And when I say beyond the mind and ego, we can get a little more specific about that. It means who you really are that has nothing to do with all of the stories you've been telling yourself about who you are your whole life. All of us have constructed a self-image, a self-concept, a self-story based on our life experiences, based on what other people have told us about ourselves, based on the stories, you know, the meaning we've made out of our life experiences. So we all have this idea of self that we're carrying around, and that's the lens through which we're seeing and engaging the world. And it has helped us navigate life up to a certain point. It's obviously a developmental step to have that self structure in the mind that we then invest. And we also, it's not just in the mind, we invest a lot of emotional energy in holding that story together, holding that self-image together. Whenever it gets challenged, we have to do a lot of maintenance work to keep our self-image and story intact. And it's usually a complex story. It's not one-dimensional. We've got good parts of ourselves, bad parts of ourselves that all fit into that story. But if you've done any investigation of spiritual things, you know that all of that is really a kind of false story. It's a limit, which doesn't mean all the details of it are wrong. It just means it's a very limited picture of who and what we are. And in fact, it's, you know, as we begin to awaken, we realize that it's arguably, you know, the least important part of who we are, because there is a dimension of who and what we are that is, by its nature, already extraordinary or superordinary. There is a part of us that already exists that doesn't need to be developed or cultivated, that is sacred in its nature. It is limitless in its capacity for wisdom, love, creativity, openness, strength, courage. It already contains most of the positive qualities and virtues that we strive to cultivate. And that this true nature, this sacred dimension of our being, is not something that is far away. It's not something we need to work toward. In fact, we simply need to realize it already exists, and we need to learn how to step into it, embrace it, allow it, which really means stop fighting and to keep it at bay. But that requires a little more subtle insight to see for most of us. But in the end, what we see as we awaken is we see, oh, my whole life I've been blocking the most significant part of who I am. I've been keeping it away. I've been resisting it because it felt too unknown, because I felt I would lose myself if I let that emerge, because it's so big. So that's the core way I would describe awakening. It's awakening to this extraordinary true nature that we already have, that contains all of these extraordinary virtues and really what I've come to call super capacities. It has a lot of extraordinary abilities. And I don't mean being psychic or having magic powers. I mean, although, you know, some of that stuff may or may not exist, but when I talk about super capacities, I mean all kinds of ways of being that make us incredibly effective in living our lives, because it breaks a lot of our really unhealthy habits that make us not very effective. So the core insight behind this work is that awakened consciousness has natural ways of showing up. It shows up as very innocent and open and curious and interested, not attached to what it already knows. When we're there, we're not attached to what we know. We're more interested in what we don't know. We're more open. We find that we are flowing with life instead of fighting with life. We're present, awake, and available, and able to respond moment by moment in a fluid way instead of constantly having our rigidities bash up against life and what is. We find that we're no longer afraid of taking big risks and stepping into the unknown, because we realize life's always unknown anyway. We're always kind of playing a big game with a big risk, just being alive every moment. So, you know, why hold on? We're no longer trying to control things in the way we used to. Many things that used to seem like limitations don't seem like limitations anymore. We no longer see others as separate. We experience the world as an individual, indivisible, non-dividable whole. And we find we have access to this capacity for wisdom. We have access to a capacity for care. Now, the reason I'm naming all these things isn't to give you a bunch of ideas about how to be, but what I want to point to is all the things I just named are the ways a person shows up when they are established in awakened consciousness. This is your true nature. It relates to life in those ways and many other specific ways. So, although these are all natural expressions of the goal of awakening, meaning they're how any of us who are awakened begin to show up and experience and engage life, they are also things that we can practice. Everything I just mentioned is something you can practice. It's not just something that, in other words, those are the expression of the goal, but they also can become the path. And in that, then the path and the goal are one and the same. And so we're no longer on a path to get to the goal. We're practicing the goal. And this isn't a semantic thing. This isn't a word game. It's a very real difference between, you know, I want you to imagine sitting down to meditate, you know, and you've meditated a lot in your life. You know, how are you relating to the practice? You're doing a practice, you know, and then how do you relate the practice to awakening or enlightenment or liberation or God realization or self-realization, you know, the lofty goal. Usually it's, I'm doing this practice now, and yes, it makes me more calm and centered and present, but that awakening is something that might happen someday if I do enough of this now. So we're turning that on its head, and we're going to practice being awake. We're going to practice being free. We're going to practice the natural inner postures of awakening. Now, I want to clarify something, which is that any one of the postures or practices that we're going to explore today are things that may initially feel impossible. So you may have the experience, what? You're asking me to do what? That's impossible. I don't know how to do it. Like, how could I do that? They may seem very easy to you too, so don't worry if they do. It doesn't mean you're not just, there's a part of us, and here's the point I want to make, there's a part of us that will always experience these kinds of practices as impossible because that part of us cannot do these practices. Your ego can't really do any of the practices I'm going to invite you to do today. And so inherently in asking you to do them, inviting you to do them, I'm inviting you at the beginning of your practice to step out of the ego and into a different aspect of your being, which will become clear as we do it. But I just want you to understand that as a basic framework for what we're doing, because in other words, when you feel that impossibility, just don't worry about it. Of course, as part of you, your ego can't do it. But the great possibility here is that another part of you can. Your true nature is already doing these practices. Your awakened consciousness already is engaged life in this way and relates in this way. So, but you don't have to try to find awakened consciousness to do it. You just engage the practice wholeheartedly and notice what happens in your experience. And, you know, you might be pleasantly surprised that if you let go of that, but I can't, and that, no, this is impossible, and you just dive in and try it innocently, that you might just find it opens a door to something quite special. So, good. So that's really the context I wanted to create for the practices we'll be doing now. And we're going to go ahead and move into the first one. So I'm going to kind of give a brief talk and then I'm going to invite us into practice. But consider the talk itself part of the practice, because I'm really trying to help you just in describing it, begin to access this aspect of your own consciousness. So go ahead and establish yourself in a meditation posture, whatever that is for you. That means sit in a way that's comfortable, but that's also supports you being alert and present. That's about all I'll say today. You can do it with your eyes open or closed. I give a lot more posture instructions in the course, but I don't want to drag us into that right now. So one of the most refreshing aspects of awakened consciousness is that it has a quality of innocence about it. When you encounter somebody who is awakened to a significant degree, you notice that they're not carrying a load of ideas with them that they're imposing on you and on life. There's a quality of not already knowing, of not needing to know the answers right away. You know, if we think about the ordinary human condition, where we're afraid of uncertainty, we attach ourselves to ideas and beliefs in order to make us feel secure and safe in an unpredictable world. And we're very often invested in what we know and what we believe, and we kind of are always imposing that. And then you have an experience of awakening, and suddenly you find, oh, I don't need to hold on to all these ideas. In fact, all the beliefs and ideas and certainties that I'm attached to are actually blocking me from being with life as it is, from being with reality, from being with other people as they are. Instead of imposing my ideas about other people, I'm actually present and available for them, for myself, for life. And when I say refreshing, it's because it's refreshing to encounter in another person, but it's also very refreshing for us to, for a moment, set down all of our insistence on knowing, all of our certainties, and experience what it is to have what Suzuki Roshi called a beginner's mind, to have a beginner's mind, to not need to know. I just want to invite you to begin to step into that right now. Just allow yourself. For a moment. To just sit down, set aside all your ideas. And more importantly, set aside the need to know anything. What would it be to not need to know at all? To be simply open, present, innocent, free, with none of that baggage right now. So I'm going to invite us to just do a very short, just a 1 minute practice of this, and then we'll do a longer one. But there's a reason, I'll explain in a minute, there's a reason I like to sometimes start with very short practices, because we can't mess it up too much in a short time. So for the next minute, don't know anything. Don't grasp on to any idea. Allow yourself the freedom to just know nothing. Not need to know anything. Not need to be involved with your mind and your thoughts. And go ahead and begin. Okay, very good. And what did you notice? I'm sure some of you had an encounter with freedom briefly. What a relief to not need to know. I'm sure others found it difficult to know how to do that, and that's okay too. Speaking of not knowing, we're going to have a little longer opportunity. One thing I just want to say about this. So many of us who are meditating or interested in meditation wonder what to do about our very active minds. And we've been taught that meditation means having no thoughts or calming down our active mind so that we can meditate and just be at peace without our minds running around and thinking all the time. So I really want to clarify that in direct awakening practice, the mind is not an obstacle. Thoughts are not, and really in life, in reality, thoughts are not an obstacle to spiritual awakening. How could they be? You think in your the realization of your true nature, if you were fully established in enlightened consciousness, living entirely from your true nature, engaging life, that you would not have thoughts? Of course you'd have thoughts. We think about things, that's how we solve problems, it's how we make plans, it's how we navigate life, it's how we create. So this is not about getting away from the mind, and it's not about calming the mind down. But there is a shift we need to make. There's a shift in our relationship to the mind, our relationship to thought. That's inherent in awakening, and that is inherent in this practice we're doing right now. the shift in, when I say our relationship to thought, I mean the way we relate to the mind, the way you relate to your mind, to your thoughts. There are different aspects of it that apply to daily life, but in meditation and in this practice, what we're learning how to do is how to not grasp onto thoughts, how to not get involved with the mind. The mind itself is fine. Thoughts can come and go. Thoughts can come and stay. But we don't grasp onto them. Why? Why don't we? Because we don't need to know. Because we're not trying to know. We're not trying to figure things out. We're resting in this innocence of not knowing, not needing any ideas, not needing to hold on to concepts, which allows us to then begin to expand and experience consciousness without fixation on thought, on ideas, which is one way of seeing what freedom is. So, don't worry if thoughts are arising. They're not in your way. But see what your relationship to thought is when you don't need to know, aren't trying to know or understand. You're just opening to innocence. Okay. That's a lot of instruction in a short time. Obviously, I'm trying to fit a lot in our workshop today, but just let all that sort of settle in your consciousness. And we're now going to engage this practice for about 4 minutes. So, for the next 4 minutes, just give yourself the freedom to not need to know anything at all. To just be here, innocent and free. To not grasp onto the mind. And anytime you do, once you notice that you are involved in the mind and thought, just don't keep doing that. Don't keep going with it. Just keep practicing. Okay. Go ahead and begin. Okay. Good. So there are many dimensions to this practice of not knowing, being innocent, resting in the unknown. But hopefully you got a little taste of the potential to simply step right into that and the freedom that is immediately available when we simply shift the way we relate to thought and the mind and knowing. That this is a shift we can make immediately and practice it. Many of you may have had an experience where you felt you were able to do it for a brief period, and then you became overwhelmed by thought and couldn't figure out how to not identify or not get involved with thought. And that's fairly common. That's why we call it practice, because it does take a bit of practice. But again, it's not practice for the future. It's practice for awakening right now. In any moment, and hopefully you saw that any moment that you're doing it, there is an experience of freedom. There is an opening to a deeper dimension of who you are. That's the key insight to take away. Okay, we're going to move to our second brief practice experiment. So, and you can just allow the fragrance of not knowing to remain with us. You don't have to do anything about it. It hopefully will continue as we do the other practice experiments too. So this next practice approach has to do with let me put it in context. So one of the reasons that spiritual practice often takes such a very long time to get to the result, or maybe forever, right? I mean, many of us have probably been meditating for many decades, or know people who have, and although we've gained benefits from that, we wonder, well, when does this get to awakening? And part of that may have to do with the practice we're doing, part may have to do with our level of commitment to that, but there's also something fundamental to the way we tend to relate to spiritual practice that is fundamentally sabotages the potential of the practice. And that has to do with, again, this point I was making earlier about as long as we see our practice as something that, as long as we see spiritual awakening as something we have to get to, as somewhere that we are not yet, that we are going to go to sometime through some process in time, meaning it's in the future and I'm moving toward it. See, any goal we have is inherently in the future. I have a goal. I want to achieve whatever, anything in our life. It's out there in the future and we're working toward it. And we bring that same orientation to our spiritual practice that's supposedly working toward the goal of awakening. The problem is, awakening never happens in the future. Awakening is awakening to your true nature right now. It's awakening to what's already true right now. It only ever happens in the moment. And as long as we've got it out there, what we're doing is we're actually preventing ourselves from seeing what's true right now. We are literally blocking ourselves from seeing our true nature, from knowing our true nature, from being awake, because we've got it out there instead of here. So one of the things that has to fundamentally shift for any of us who want to awaken is we have to stop waiting for it and postponing it and projecting it out into the future. And we literally have to completely stop doing that. which is arguably one of the most challenging things for any human being to do. We're so wired to look at life that way, and obviously many things in life are that way, most things, but not awakening. It's not a process in time. So this is really a practice of no longer, it's a practice of giving up our insistence that there's something missing right now. See, many of us find it, most of us find it very hard to accept that the person we are right now, that the experience we're having right now is utterly adequate and sufficient for awakening. In other words, there's nothing missing from you right now. There's nothing wrong with this moment right now that makes it somehow not a fertile field for your instant awakening. There will never be a better moment to be yourself. There will never be a better you that's more prepared to let go and finally surrender to the glory of your own true nature. So I want to invite you right now to take the radical position that this is it. As Alan Watts said, this is it. This moment, you as you are, you have already arrived at the destination you've been seeking. It includes everything about you and everything about your experience of this moment. The mind you have right now, the feelings you have right now. Life as it is right now. Nothing stands between you and your inherent freedom, your awakened nature, the consciousness that is hearing the words I'm saying right now, that is having the experience you're having right now, is already awakened consciousness. Nothing about it needs to change. In this moment, allow yourself to accept everything as it is right now. Let everything be as it is right now. There's no need to change anything, to become anything. Let go of control. Let life happen. This moment is already whole and complete, missing nothing. You are already whole and complete. Let everything be. Let yourself be as you are. Okay. Again, you can allow the fragrance of this practice to just remain You don't need to stop practicing. But just allow yourself to return to listening. We're going to do one more little experiment in meditation. So when many of us think about meditating, and we sit down to meditate, the way we orient to it is we think that we are going to generate something or make something happen. And this is, again, normally is how we do things in life. We apply a method to achieve a result. And meditation is a method. It's something we're going to do, and we're going to cause something through doing this. And that's one way to look at meditation, and it's not wrong. There's an element of that, perhaps. But there's another way to look at meditation that is perhaps truer to the deeper dimensions of meditative practice and the deeper nature of what's happening, which is that meditation is really already happening. There's a meditation that's already occurring. There's a part of us that is always already in meditation. Because you see, properly understood, meditation is, it's abiding in a liberated relationship to our experience. It's abiding in our natural state, in our natural freedom. That's always already the case. So there's always a deeper part of us that's deep in meditation. It's in profound meditation. And there's always, and consciousness is always already free. Our nature, individually and collectively, is always already liberated consciousness, awakened awareness. So when we meditate, we're really just making ourselves available to something that's already going on. We're turning toward a process that's already occurring, a freedom that already exists. We're not generating something or making something happen in consciousness. We're just opening to what's happening already. So for this practice, I want to invite you to just let the meditation happen by itself. Don't try to meditate. Don't try to make something happen by applying a method. Still in this moment, here, right now, just allow yourself to gently bring your attention to the meditation that's already occurring. You don't need to look for a particular kind of experience. But just let meditation happen. meditation has a kind of gravitational pull to it. Allow it to draw you in. Allow the meditation to draw you into it. You're just allowing yourself to be taken. Just stop holding on and let a deeper power move you into meditation. Meditation is like a river that's always flowing through the moment. It's always flowing through this moment of experience. We can either try to stand still and resist the current, or we can just allow the current to sweep us away. Just let the current of meditation, the river of meditation, flow without resistance. just want to invite you to allow each of these different practice experiments that we worked with today to just continue to flow into your life today in whatever way they do naturally. I don't recommend trying to keep meditating while you engage with the day. I mean, if you want to keep meditating for a while or do some more meditation today to work with these, that's wonderful. But in terms of once we get up and engage with other people, not trying to hold on to the meditation, but just allow it to unfold, because it will often, we'll have an experience during the day of some of the echoes from the practice starting to shift the way we relate to life in mysterious ways because of the even brief work we did like today. It's plenty of time. Because awakening doesn't have to take time, a few minutes of awakening practice can transform our whole day. So, I know I went a little long on the the workshop, the practice part, but I wanted to make sure I gave you a full, at least a little taste of several different awakening practices, meditation practices. I'll go ahead and extend the Q&A for a while, so there's plenty of time to get to any questions about all this. And particularly, if you want to post a question, you can write it in, or you can, if you want to ask me one on the phone, you can press *2, but I'm going to specifically take questions about what I talked about today, not other aspects of life or practice. So please keep it to that. Before we move into the Q&A, though, I have a couple things I want to just share. So, as I mentioned, all of what I'm sharing today is really derived from this incredible program that's going on right now that I mentioned at the beginning, the practice of direct awakening. We're 10 weeks in, and literally from the very first week, people started to just have really profound experiences and profound openings and awakenings that, I mean, I was fully anticipating and intending that would be the product of the course, but it started happening from the first week very intensely and has really just grown since then. And I've been flooded with reports from people about awakenings that are occurring, and they feel very tangible and real. In fact, I think I'm going to share some of those probably by email at some point this week, just share some of what people are experiencing so you can get a sense of what's possible through a more dedicated application to this approach. Now, we opened this course in October and then closed it in October, so we had a contained group going through it. But we've had a lot of requests from people who were unable to make the time commitment to participate in it, but were curious about it and wanted to try the work. People asking if they could purchase the audios from the course, you know, get access to the material. And so we've been thinking a lot about what to do, because I can't just create new huge cohorts of people and guide them through it, you know, constantly. So I'm excited to announce that we've actually done better than just packaging up the audios for purchase. We have built, my incredible team of 30 people has built a digital e-learning platform that enables you now to take the course on your own time. You can, you know, enroll in the course, and each week you'll get a complete module. You'll get access to a complete module with 3 guided audio meditations, a written practice guide, a 90-minute course session that is much like kind of today. It's a talks and workshop and workshopping the meditation practices. You'll even get the recordings from the live meditation coaching sessions we did. And all of this is now ready to go for the first time. It's just literally Friday we got it fully put together. And And they, our team has put together a special introductory offer for the holidays that's active for about the next 10 days, I think, where you can get a discounted tuition if you're part of the first group to participate in this new kind of self-paced e-learning platform. It's quite remarkable what they've put together. It's probably the most beautiful online platform I've seen for learning, and it all makes it very easy to do it on your own schedule and not have to show up for live events. So for anybody who's curious about this work, would like to do it, obviously the new year is almost upon us, and it can be a great time to, you know, if you've been wanting to do a dedicated meditation practice, this can be a very powerful time to commit and go through a program to really ground you in a practice commitment and teach you a new way to do it. So I'm not going to speak much more about it here, but I just wanted to really let you know that now exists. There is a link on the webcast page to the page for that, or if you go to directawakening.com at any time, directawakening.com, that has all the information about the course, the 12 modules that each explore a different aspect of direct awakening practice, and it's quite an intensive, comprehensive program that is having really remarkable results in people's lives, and I invite you to join. In fact, for everybody who takes advantage of this first initial offer this next 10 days, I'm going to do 3 live meditation coaching sessions with the group. So as well, we'll have a monthly event where we get together and I take your specific questions and help guide you in the practice. So I encourage you to do that. That's just only going to be for this first group. So check that out on your own time. And I look forward, hopefully, to meeting some of you in that program. Good. So that was just the piece I wanted to say. And then I'm going to open this up for your questions about what we've explored today. Let's see what we have. So again, if you want to ask a question on the phone, you press star 2. I will begin with some written ones. Becky in Portland. Hi, Becky. Says, thank you for these practices. The fear that keeps popping up for me is that if I'm awakened and others who are close to me are not, I will become separated from them. Do you have any thoughts that can help me with this fear? Well, Becky, I wish I could take away that fear, but I do have to be honest that what you're describing does to some degree happen for people, sometimes anyway, happen for people as they awaken. It's like we, and here's a way to understand it. We get together with people in relationships because we share things in common with them. And or, you know, we have family of origin relationships that obviously what we share in common is our whole life because we, you know, we grew up together and, you know, we have family. It's so we, or we do it in work context, but there's all kinds of different reasons we get in relationship. And yet if we change, what we're interested in changes, our values change, the way we look at the world changes, everything changes about us. And we then sometimes find that the people that we have been in relationship with for other reasons and that we used to share a lot in common with, we don't any longer. And that doesn't just happen through spiritual awakening. That happens through growth and development in all kinds of ways, right? Most of us have probably experienced that. Like someone we used to be really close to, we then grew and evolved and changed and we're just not that close. We don't have that much in common. We don't have that much to share. It's not that interesting to spend time together. So we've moved on, and awakening's no different. It's just more radical because you're literally often, we're awakening up to a completely different experience of self and a completely different experience of life and a whole new sense of what's important and what's meaningful. And when you're enlivened and animated by that, often, you know, to use a metaphor, your frequency, your vibrational frequency changed. I don't mean it in some literal sense, but yeah, you're like operating at a new frequency, a new voltage, level of voltage in life. And so it is natural to then you want to spend time with people who are at that same frequency, so to speak. And so, and that's okay. We need to make that okay. And then in terms of what that means for specific relationships, we just need to be very human and caring and conscious and sensitive about how we navigate those changes. But anyway, I can't really say more, but it is natural to some degree. Neha, thank you, in Park City. It's just a comment saying that she moved into a deeper space that she appreciated immensely. It was delightful and amazing. Thanks for the comment. Just getting a lot of very nice comments here. See what I have for questions. Kathy in Phoenix, hi. Saying that she also appreciated this and is just wondering about, do I see signs of global healing arising from people doing spiritual practice? I think that probably the way to look at that, because it's pretty hard to look around at the world right now and see signs of, I mean, we see a lot of signs of everything, don't we? You know, I mean, I don't think signs are even maybe the way I would look at it, but I would say, you know, absolutely doing practices like this is a contribution to the evolution of consciousness. And there are all kinds of ways that consciousness is awakening and evolving. We can, the way to see it is to do that, because, you know, often the news, the realities of life, we're bombarded with a lot of the negativity, and it can look like, oh, things are just getting worse and worse in so many ways. But do an exercise where you, just for a moment, just for a day or for a period, look only at all the positive progress and look at it in a deep time perspective, meaning, you know, compare like life now to 100 years ago, to 200, 300, 400, and just look at the broad trajectories and look at all the positives. And it's pretty overwhelming to see all the incredible progress, and even in human rights and human freedoms and global consciousness and caring for the whole planet. You know, there's an emergence that was never there before. So that's there. And certainly the work you and I are doing to awaken and evolve is contributing to it. And does that mean that's changing the whole world? Clearly not. Clearly not changing the whole world yet, is it? So that's okay, though. You know, the way consciousness tends to move forward is by people out at the leading edge really moving it forward significantly, and then that exerts a kind of upward pull on the rest of humanity, and that's how values and culture and everything evolves. So we don't need to look around and see that the whole world's changing all at once to feel like we're making a real difference through the work we're doing in all kinds of ways. So thank you. A couple of people asking if they'll be able to get access to this audio. Yeah, we'll send out the audio in a day or two once it gets kind of posted and all that. Definitely. Okay, I should just see if anybody wants to ask me a question on the phone. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, I have, by the way, the caller ID doesn't always work precisely here, so it may have the wrong name for you, but I'll say your name and the location. So I have a Gladys Clement in Hilo, Hawaii. So if you're in Hawaii, it's you, whoever you are. you're unmuted.
Hi, what's your name?
Darmini.
Hi, welcome. I can hear you.
Yeah. It's Darmini, Craig. Can you hear me?
Darmini, yes. Hi there. Yes, I hear you.
Thank you so much for sharing this and all that you do. Really appreciate it. I had really wanted to be with you on the live calls in October, but was unable. Might you consider doing that again?
Doing what? The whole course again?
Yes, in live. Mm-hmm.
Well, from I think from now on, I mean, all the course sessions have been professionally studio recorded now. So essentially, the course, the weekly videos are all fully produced. All the course module sessions, which are the ones where I'm guiding you through the whole thing, those are all professionally produced. So all of that material now is going to be kind of permanent. I mean, not permanent, but, you know, that's going to be the core modules of the program. And then the live component is the meditation coaching sessions with me, where you can bring your practices and ask me your questions. And for this initial module, I'm going to do one of those each month for 3 months, and we're going to include all the Q&A sessions from the recent course as well. So that's what we have available now. Will I sometime do it again, maybe with a lot more live meditation coaching? I may, absolutely. Not right now, but definitely not planning not to do that. Okay?
Yes, I hear you. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, and the guided meditations are also fully produced, kind of studio recording, 30-minute ones that you get 3 of each week to work with. So there's all that in the practice guides. So it's really all a fully produced program now. I have someone in Austin, Texas, Alex Green, or whoever you are in Austin. Hi.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I was wondering if there will be an opportunity for small group sharing in this.
Yeah, what there is we've got kind of 2 ways to connect. We've got an online portal that has a discussion. Each week of the course has a discussion thread attached to it. So there's a lot of beautiful sharing going on online with people writing their experiences and supporting each other. And so there's that part. There's also an opportunity to join a private Facebook group of people in this work and connect that way. And then if you want to have live where you're getting together on the phone, like you're talking about, that's more of a self-organizing dimension. But you can totally, we have the setup for you to do that. And so people who want to self-organize into groups and talk about it is there. But we're not structuring that and organizing the groups. So, but there are always seem to be people who want to be in groups, and so it's pretty easy to pull that off if you want to. Yeah.
Thank you. Does that also, is there any problem with the fact that I on the e-course, everyone will be at a different place at a different time, perhaps?
Well, everybody will be at a different place, but a lot of people will be in the same time zones, right? I mean, even though we had, like in this course, people from 65 countries, of course, the vast majority of them are from, you know, the Americas, you know, North American continent for the most part, and then, you know, fewer in Europe and some in Australia, you know, people scattered all over the world, but there's a pretty high, you're in America, you're in the States, and so there's a pretty high concentration in your time zone. So you'll certainly be able to find people who can connect in your time zone if you want to do that.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. I was referring to like different places in
getting together in person. Getting together in person, okay. Like, will there be enough people in Austin to get together for a meetup? I don't know that. It depends.
No, just the fact that it's self-paced is what I'm getting at.
Oh, you mean people be at different points in the course? Well,
right,
the good news is,
right.
Well, here's the thing. When I say self, so the course, like I said, is going to be, you know, this particular opportunity right now is going to be for 10 days. People are going to sign up over the next 10 days. So people will mostly be at the same place in the course. And then each week a new module appears on the site from starting the time that you enrolled. You get the first module, and a week later, the second one, a week later, the third one. So there will be a pretty good center of gravity of people moving through it at the same time.
Okay.
Yeah. So I would think if you're part of this now, you know, there will be a pretty good chunk of people all going through it over the next, you know, 12, 13 weeks, depending when they exactly signed up. And you could, you know, you could certainly post something on the site saying, hey, I just, you know, started this week. Is there anybody else who wants to, you know, go through this together and talk? And could happen.
Great. Great. Thank
Sorry,
you.
I misunderstood you. What you meant by different places. I understand.
Yeah. Nope.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Let's see here. I got have someone in Colorado. It doesn't say your name. It's a 303 number.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, I'm Sarah.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for today and your work. I would just love to hear your take on or experience with, as I've done more meditation practice in the last 3 years and today as well, I find immense levels of pretty intense emotion and tears, and it seems to be fairly consistent. And my brain, I don't know, it struggles to label it, and I struggle to just let it be, and then what does it mean, and then surrender to it. And
well,
so
let me ask you a question or two. So what would you, just right now in the moment, how would you describe the feeling quality that's associated with the tears? Would you say it's like you're feeling like deep feelings of love? Would you say you're feeling feelings of grief or sadness? You know, just
it feels like it honestly oscillates during the sessions today. It oscillated from release and, oh my gosh, I'm loved and we're one and I feel it. I feel the connection.
Yeah.
And then I move into I've been trying so hard and nothing is working. And here I go again. I get this feeling and then nothing comes of it. And my life is still shit. And then relax and let go. And then, okay, I'm here again. And here's the bliss and I'm connected. Does that make sense?
Okay. I get it. So there's
I feel a bit bipolar.
There's a whole range and a whole cycle and a lot going on. And you're saying there's just a lot of emotion around all of it. You're feeling a lot of emotion, and it's bringing tears. And
it's really intense.
Yeah. I hear
and
you.
And I do it for a while, and then I'm like, I can't cry this hard this often.
Uh-huh.
So I stop for a while.
And you're saying this happens even with other approaches to meditation. It's kind of been just an ongoing occurrence with meditative practice.
Yeah, I would say probably 70% of the time I get into a release and, you know, some kind of releasing emotion type space when I meditate.
Well, this is interesting. So I'm going to say a couple things about it. So one is that it's not, I mean, we're all different types of people. And it sounds like possibly anyway, you're a fairly emotionally sensitive, tuned in to your feeling. You really feel, it sounds to me like you really feel your feelings pretty deeply and intensely. Whereas other people, you know, don't necessarily.
Yeah.
So part of this is kind of typological. You're that type of person that's comes natural and easy to you. You feel very deeply. And, you know, I had a number of people like that in this current cohort of the course, and every week they would talk about how they just burst into tears when they had this like revelation. and you know, I know other people who don't tend to feel, you know, have that strong of a feeling kind of component where like, why are you crying all the time? You know, so we have to kind of realize we're all different in these ways and make room for the person we are and the way we naturally respond. So part of it is just to notice, wow, well, so part of it, I would say for your personality type, that's it's a good sign because it means the work is doing something. Like, you know, it's, you know, you described how you were having an experience of love and oneness and connection, and, you know, the fact that you're able to have that so quickly and easily and connect to some deeper energetics, that's a very good thing. That's movement. Mm. That's connection. That's, you know, you're activating something. And then there's you, the human being, with your emotional response to everything that you're opening to and activating. And it sounds like that's pretty, you're a pretty sensitive instrument. So you're kind of, you know, firing off on in all these directions all the time. So for that, I would also say, there are a lot of different approaches to meditation, but one of the elements of direct awakening practice has to do with, it's just one of the practices, but it has to do with being utterly non-reactive to whatever arises. Like, it's a powerful practice of equanimity where you're learning how to sit through anything without reacting to it, without having any preference in one direction or another, without being moved by anything. Just let it all, but without, it's not about being detached from or disconnected or dissociated, which we often associate with that kind of a posture. Like, you're removing yourself. You're sitting in the midst of life, in the midst of your experience, but allowing it all to just move without you moving and just being consciousness still and present. And a practice like that might help you find a bit more stability and kind of groundedness and centeredness even as you continue to have these experiences. Because there may very well, and you named this, there may very well be a component of what's happening for you that is a kind of release. You're like releasing things, you're opening, when we start to awaken, we also start to heal. we start to unleash processes in our own psyche that are natural. You know, just like everybody talks about how the body has a natural healing process, if we can learn how to support that, the psyche has a natural healing process that gets unleashed by a meditative and awakening practices. Our true nature, you know, we start to become aware of it, and all the things that are dysfunctional and kind of wounded and messed up about us start to kind of reorganize, and it's like a cellular kind of psychological, psycho-emotional cellular reorganization of your system around a higher order. And so that can cause a lot of upheaval internally, but I would say it would probably over time even out into a more steady, even flow, as opposed to the kind of volcanic eruptions that you're experiencing. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. I have one clarifying question, if I may.
Yeah.
So in that practice you suggested, am I allowing myself to, you know, you said don't associate, but I'm confused at
don't disassociate. Don't remove yourself.
So how do I feel the feelings or be in the moment without reacting to it? That's what you're saying, right?
That's your challenge.
That's the practice.
Yeah, yeah. I'll give you a simple instruction. Obviously in the course we go into this all with a lot more depth, but I'll give you a simple instruction and you can work with it and see. So try this meditation where you're like, it's like you're the rock. It's counter to what we were doing today, where I was saying let the current carry you. So this one is like you're a rock in the middle of the river, and the river is flowing around you, and you are unmoving. You know, you're like the strong tree in the hurricane that just doesn't get uprooted and ripped out. You're just there, deeply present. So your practice is, I'm going to be fully present in this moment, allowing my full experience to be here, including all the feelings that arise. I'm going to do it. But here, so maybe this is what will shift it for you. But I'm not going to focus on those feelings. I'm not going to give my attention to them. I'm going to let them happen, meaning that you're going to feel them, they're going to arise. But I'm not going to turn toward the feelings. I'm just going to let them arise and pass, and I am sitting still, and I am unmoving. I am like the Buddha under the Bodhi tree, or Jesus in the desert with the circle around him, and these intense experiences pulling me to get out of the circle, pulling me toward them, are all arising, but I don't move. I am sitting here, witness to all that arises, but moved by none of it. Free, non-reactive, like that.
Okay.
I mean, that's a very brief little experiment, but work with it, you know, I think you got the idea.
I'm in tears.
And that's okay. It's not about not having that. Okay. You can't make anything wrong. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is a problem. Tears are not wrong. They're not a problem. You don't go, oh, I'm not doing it because I'm crying. Oh, I'm getting reactive. Don't react to that. React to that. Just whatever keeps happening, you just stay present.
Yeah, quantum. It feels like what I need to hear. It feels like where I need to go next with this metamorphosis. So thank you
all
so
right.
much.
Good. Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Like I mentioned, I'm just extending this a bit. I'll go another maybe 7 minutes. We'll go till 9:45. Just want to... Yeah, Richard in Carson City. Yeah, we'll send you the audio for this so you can share it with your friend. Kurt in Portland says, you suggested having a beginner's mind. Is it beneficial to always practice in this way, now and continuously in the future? Yes, these practices, any of them, are practices of a lifetime, meaning, and here's why. Because these, as I said, these are not preparatory practices. They're not practices you do now to get to a goal later. They're simply taking up the natural qualities, the natural postures of awakened consciousness. And so there's no beginning version and advanced version. I mean, there are subtle nuances maybe that emerge over time, but fundamentally, any of these practices, you do it now, you do it for the rest of your life, you're just reinforcing, establishing yourself in awakened consciousness. Now, you can get to a point where it all is so natural that you don't even really call it practice anymore. You know, it's your natural state, and it's how you already are relating to life, and so, in a sense, life has become practice, or practice has become life. That's possible. But yeah, having a beginner's mind is always a good idea, even when you're the world's greatest expert. I'm sure a lot of the world's greatest experts in various topics approach each day of their investigation and inquiry with a very open mind. It's how you become a great, you know, it's how you become a bearer of wisdom, is by never assuming you already know, by not sitting and resting on your laurels and clinging to knowing, but by remaining open and more interested in what you don't yet know and what is yet to emerge than the knowledge you have now. So yeah, it's good. Thank you, Ruth. I'm seeing some pleasant comments. Oh, someone wants to know about the music we were playing. Okay, I'll tell you. It's a lovely track from Ray Lynch, who's also a very spiritual composer. It's called Only an Enjoyment. Only an Enjoyment by Ray Lynch. Okay. Scanning for another. Somebody said you couldn't find the link on the webcast page. It says, I believe it's on there. It was on there yesterday. I didn't look today. It says, visit the Direct Awakening course information page here. Anyway, if it's for some reason not on the page, go to directawakening.com. Directawakening.com. I'll look at all the comments, by the way, too. Okay. Brenda in Bowen Island says, I recently took your Journey into Freedom meditation course. How is this practice of direct awakening the same or different from that? So So Journey into Freedom is also a program that I offer, and it is it's basically 32 meditation audios where I half-hour practices, and I guide you into practice. And so that's more of like a collection of meditation, of guided meditations. And it's this, you know, you'll, if you've been through that and you take the practice of Direct Awakening course, you'll notice similarities in the types of practices I'm teaching. But the practice of Direct Awakening is really the first meditation course I've ever taught, where I, you know, I've led a lot of meditation retreats. I've done a lot of guided meditation audios. But this is a, I decided this time to set out to really teach meditation methodically from beginning to end, to teach this practice of Direct Awakening. So there's a whole module at the beginning on setting the context and the ground and establishing awakened consciousness as something we really have an experience of. Then there's a module where we lay foundations and all the preparational work that we need to really establish a profound practice. So we're working on posture and environment and intention and motivation, and there's a whole structure to that. And then we methodically work through several of these different practice postures, spending a week on each of them. So it's a much more comprehensive course where I'm really leading workshops, teaching you the practices, and then I'm giving you the meditation practices to go and listen to and or do on your own. And there are practice guides for each week that have practices to do on your own. So it's just a Journey into Freedom. I often think of as a good kind of simple introduction into my work, into the meditation programs. But the practice of Direct Awakening is now a much fuller course offering that is more comprehensive. So a lot of people who had taken Journey into Freedom took this and said it really opened it up and took it much further and deeper for them. Yeah. Just scanning a little more. We're about at the end here. Getting a lot of comments, so I'm just looking for the questions. Nancy in Kanad says, I experience strong religious images in meditation, although I don't consider myself as a practitioner of a particular religion. I feel I'm being shown these for a purpose and that there's a powerful presence that comes with them. Your thoughts, please. Nancy, in meditation, I can't comment on whether you're being shown them for a purpose or not, but what I can say is in doing this form of meditation practice, we may experience all kinds of things, from difficult feelings and struggles to extraordinary, beautiful imagery and sacred feelings and experiences. And the key with the practices is to really just be an open space for all of that to arise, but not to try to interpret it, not to try to make meaning out of it, not to try to understand it, but to simply allow it. Because what we're really doing is we're making ourselves available for a deeper process to begin to operate in us, guide us, open us up. And so I would just encourage you to remain very open and innocent in relation to those. They're coming, they're happening, just let them happen. Don't try to figure it out. Don't try to interpret it. Again, in meditation, just let it all be, and it will have its own effect on your consciousness in whatever way it does. But that's really the way I would encourage you to engage with that. Theodore in Lafayette, when one is so lonely, how can awakening help, if at all? That's my last question. How does awakening help with loneliness? I would say, Theodore, that awakening would absolutely resolve loneliness. Because when we awaken to who, and because again, I'm not going to give a long commentary on loneliness, but really any, let's just broaden it out. Loneliness, kind of mild depression, you know, existential angst and existential anxiety, you know, a lot of the kind of common maladies of our time, right? These are psycho-emotional maladies. They're things many of us today experience in, you know, it's been analyzed as to how it's part of our disconnected world, you know, or many of us live alone and spend a lot of our time alone. There's, you know, a lot of cultural analysis on this, but spiritually speaking, see, when we awaken to our true nature, you could never feel alone again. When you recognize who and what you are and what this event is, I mean like the cosmos, the universe, consciousness, life awakening to itself, you discover that you are so full. You discover that your own nature is a fountain. It's a source that is endless. It's a limitless source of fullness, wholeness, contentment, happiness. Love is your own true nature. And all of that starts to just flow through you into the world. And when you are that source of fullness that is flowing into the world, loneliness is the last thing on your mind. You know, there's just such a sense of completeness, wholeness, fullness, expansiveness that probably would end up propelling you also into engagement and connection, because by its nature that it starts to overflow and we want to give it. We can't keep it for ourselves, so we want to give it. So it starts to flow outward, and then you find yourself also very connected to others who are interested in the same things. And there's just I think all of the sort of psycho-emotional maladies of our time, whether it's, the ones I mentioned and many others, they're not really possible within awakened consciousness. Because we've the person who was lonely, the person who was a bit depressed, I'm saying a bit because I don't want to say this heals, deep psychopathology or disorders. I'm not making that promise, even though, you know, I know it can do that sometimes, but I'm not recommending this as a therapeutic modality. But a lot of the sort of things that many of us experience in to greater or lesser degrees, get wiped away because you discover that you're something very different than you thought you were, and life is very different than you thought it was, and it's all very extraordinary and beautiful and sacred, and that just that captures your attention in a way that those feelings that used to be so dominant, just, it's not that they might not still arise in certain ways, they just don't have any grip on your consciousness any longer, and then you're free and you're whole. You realize you always were, and that kind of erases it historically too in an interesting way. Okay, I'm going to stop. I've gone over by quite a bit. I appreciate all of your questions. I really appreciate all your comments. If you want to take a deeper dive into this work, go to directawakening.com. We have this great holiday opportunity to take advantage of a new cohort with the e-learning course. So I hope you'll check that out. If you decide to join me, I look forward to getting to know you through that work and helping support you in your own awakening process. So with that, we'll go ahead and bring it to an end. Thanks so much, everybody. Lovely to be with you. Bye-bye.